You are listening to Arrive by the Cycling Podcast.
Hello and welcome to Arrive by the Cycling Podcast. We're going to be recapping the Women's World Championship Road Race. Glasgow served up another cracker, just as it did a week ago. Well, we've got to give the riders some credit, I guess. They're the ones that make the race rather than the course. My name is Lionel Burney, and with the A team out of action, unavailable for selection today, I've called on Denny Gray, fresh from the Tour de France fam, an excellent addition to our coverage over there in France. And, well, I don't want to imply that you're being called up from the reserves, Denny, but I'm certainly being called up from the reserves to recap the women's road race at the Worlds. And we've just watched it, haven't we? And what a humdinger it was.
Yeah, no, thanks, Lionel. I think we were trying to work out whether we were the D team or the E team beforehand, weren't we? But anyway, whatever we are, we're here. It was a cracking race. I have to say, I was a little bit nervous before the race. We've seen some kind of brilliant editions of the road races, both at the kind of senior and junior and under 23 levels. And I guess I was just hoping for more of the same for the women today. And I don't think they disappointed.
They certainly didn't. I mean, the final day of the Super Worlds, isn't it? The closing ceremony, if you like. I mean, in terms of entertainment, the women's race served up certainly equaled, I would say, exceeded the men's race in terms of the kind of the variety, the nuance, the suspense. I mean, last week was like a sort of heavyweight world title fight. This was like a heavyweight world title fight with no rules whatsoever. I mean, it was just a slugfest, really, from about 75 kilometres to go. I won't try to recap every significant event in the race in my summary of the race for the Rainbow Jersey. But it set off from Loch Lomond and finished again in Glasgow, a circuit that we now know an awful lot better than we did a week ago. A couple of notable non-starters, Chloe Dygert of the USA, the new world time trial champion, and Kasia Nieuwendomme, one of Poland's big riders, both out with respiratory infections. But the race got underway, and there was quite a significant move after about 20 kilometres, which had Lizzie Deignan and Elise Shabby in it, more of them later. They had about a minute as they were approaching the Crow Road, but they were caught on the run in towards Glasgow. And that's where the peloton split into two for this strange period. Lorena Rebus and Mariana Vos were caught in the back group. Rebus eventually pulled out of the race on the circuit. And as they approached Glasgow, Kim Kadzo of New Zealand attacked. And she was then caught significantly again by Elise Shabby, Lotta Kopecky, Liana Lippert, Demi Vollering, Grace Brown, Sylvia Persico and Anna Henderson. There was then an attack by Elise Shabby of Switzerland with 74 kilometres to go, and she quickly gained 30 seconds and in fact was away for almost 60 kilometres on her own, and she was caught just before they reached the finish line with the bell signalling one lap to go. At one point the gap was up to around 1 minute 25, it never got a lot more than that, and it kind of yo-yoed back and forth down to sort of 30 seconds, down to a tantalising sort of 12 or 13 seconds at one point as the race kicked off behind. And it was really those final 35 kilometres where the sort out took place in earnest. As you'd expect, Annemiek van Vleuten, the defending champion, was involved. She'd in fact been off the back by more than a minute at one point after a front wheel puncture, slow wheel change and then a bike change. But she got herself up to the front again and started the aggression. And ironically, it was Shabby's Swiss teammate, Marlon Reusser, who contributed significantly to the shake-up, going very hard up Montrose Street. And that basically sorted things out down to this chase group of Demi Vollering and Annemiek van Vleuten for the Netherlands, Lotta Kopecky of Belgium. Reusser was in there just marking things for Switzerland. Lizzie Deignan of Great Britain, Cecily Uttrup Ludwig of Denmark, and Christina Schweinberger. And then the final lap was pure gold, wasn't it? Deignan ghosted away at one point with Schweinberger. Then Reusser and Kopecky went across to make it a front four. And then we had the ding-dong battle between Vollering and Kopecky. They were trading blows. SD Works teammates, of course, but on opposite sides in the World Championships. Vollering was off, you know, the back, trying to chase down Capecchi at one point. Looked like she couldn't close the gap. And then all of a sudden she was up at the front again. And then she had cramp and she had her left foot out of the pedal, shaking her leg. I mean, it was an extraordinary final lap. And then the denouement was kicked off by Cecilie Uttrup Ludvig of Denmark. She went clear on her own. And behind, Capecchi and Vollering went toe-to-toe. And in the end, a very worthy world champion, Lotte Capecchi of Belgium, winning the gold medal. And Vollering pipping Ludvig on the line for the silver. But what a shakedown. And I wonder, having been at the Tour de France Femme, Denny, was this kind of what you were expecting, this battle between Capecchi and Vollering?
Yeah, absolutely. I think it was definitely building towards this. And we saw what just unbelievable good form Lotte Capecchi was in during the tour. Not only, I mean, we knew how good she was and what a great season she was having, of course, but to hold the yellow jersey for so long, to perform so brilliantly on the Col de Tourmalet against all expectations, to win the green jersey and, of course, a stage, and then finish second on GC after a phenomenal time trial on the last stage. We knew she was in the form of her life. And, of course, Damien Vollering, a teammate, won the tour. And I think it was going to be difficult to look past those two, really, as the certainly they were amongst the front runners. I think Capecchi was the outstanding favourite coming into the race, and of course was carrying a lot of pressure as a result. But, you know, the thing for me that kind of stood out was the fact that she then went and did the track this week, won two world titles on the track, the elimination race and the points race, also did the Madison. And so there was a bit of a question mark coming in to the race about kind of how fresh she might be. Clearly, she answered those questions throughout the race.
And the outstanding one-day rider, really, Lotte Capecchi, isn't she? I mean, she won the Tour of Flanders early this season. Of course, Vollering and Capecchi went head-to-head in Strade Bianche way back in March, didn't they, where you couldn't really split them on the line. And I suppose Capecchi's thinking was that she needed to get out of that group and get Vollering off her wheel, otherwise she might be vulnerable to something similar happening. And we did see, didn't we, the frustration for Capecchi, because she was aggressive. She must have tried half a dozen times to try and whittle that group down a bit. Obviously she was the rider that everybody wanted to mark, and there wasn't a great deal of willingness to work with her. And of course, from behind, the onus and the emphasis was on Demi Vollering to just sort of close that gap down. So it did look like they were going to sort of nullify each other and perhaps, you know, rule themselves and each other out of contention at one point, especially when Ludvig went away. It looked like potentially they might have cost themselves, but it wasn't for lack of trying. I mean, they were attacking each other and attacking the group repeatedly. It was quite, you know, breathtaking stuff for, as I say, those last three laps of the circuit in Glasgow.
Yeah, I mean, there was some really fearless racing, wasn't there? And a lot of the riders showed that they weren't afraid to lose the race by attacking, which is always great to watch. I think the thing with Capecchi was that she said in her post-race interview that she was quite calm going into the race. She wasn't nervous. I think there was a bike change for her 109 kilometres out, but she calmly went back, changed bikes, rode away back into the peloton during a kind of lull in proceedings, and looked very calm. But then, as the attacking started on the circuits, she quickly only had one teammate, Justin Kerkia, I think is the right way to pronounce it. She had to kind of do a lot of work to chase down moves, and she kind of picked her moments when she wanted to close down moves. There was a move from Anna Henderson that she closed down, for example. I was beginning to wonder whether she was kind of being kind of forced to do a little bit too much work. Well, other teams had the numbers, you know, the Italians, the Dutch, the GB team, I think made a note of 45k to go. They had kind of four or five each, whereas the Belgians only had two, including Capecchi. But she kind of managed that kind of tightrope walk of trying to make sure none of her kind of key rivals got away, but also conserve enough energy to wait for the right moments really, really well. I was, you know, really impressed. Although, of course, then Chabi's attack kind of eked out, the gap eked out further and further. And as you said, Lionel, at one point it got to nearly to a minute 30. And I think then Lippert was saying she was getting a bit nervous. And I think at that moment, we weren't quite sure whether Chabi might actually be allowed to get away and stay away, because she's certainly a strong, punchy rider that can suit a course like that.
A lot was made of the circuit and you know the technical nature of it, the number of accelerations required. Really, it's a sort of sprint every 30 seconds. I mean, there is obviously that little bit of micro recovery, as people describe it, going into the corners, but it's a circuit that just saps away, but does also play into the hands of one committed rider out in front. I mean, we saw that with Matthew van der Poel in the men's race, obviously not for anything like as long out in front, but Elise Chabbie, when she was out in front, you know, a punchy, explosive rider, more of a climber, really, the circuit was definitely playing into her hands, and just keeping that gap steady, even when, you know, the aggression was kicking off behind and it was coming down, the fact that they weren't closing up to her was, for a while, it did look like, well, if she can get another 10 kilometres here down the road, it might start to look like the pendulum might swing in her favour. An extraordinary ride by her, and especially, you know, the Swiss playing it very well with Marlon Reusser in the group behind. She really had a free ride, didn't she? And, you know, quite a turnaround. What a remarkable week it's been for Reusser. I mean, am I right in saying she crashed in the mixed relay, didn't she, which Switzerland won? Then, of course, she pulled out of the time trial after or between the first time check and the second time check, citing mental burnout. And then here she is in the thick of things and, in the end, fourth in the road race at the World Championships. Quite an extraordinary up-and-down week for Marlon Reusser. But I just wanted to say about Lotte Kopecky, because she has been the most outstanding one-day rider of the season, really. But it was that Tour de France Femme performance that really sort of elevated her from being, and I'm using air quotes here, just a one-day rider, because it was a fantastic week. She had all that time in the yellow jersey. As you say, she dug deep on the Tourmalet stage and then clawed herself back up to second, by a fraction of a second, wasn't it, overall in the time trial in Pau. As you say, she's won world titles already this week. But do you know when the last Belgian winner of the women's road race at the World Championships was? Because I was surprised how far you have to go back.
Yeah, no, 1973. Yeah, I was amazed as well, looking at the records. It's hard to believe, isn't it? You know, we get used to Belgium being so dominant in road racing generally, but on the women's side, it's not been the case as much. The kind of the Netherlands are kind of the dominant nation, at least they have been in the last few years, and so it'd be big news back home in Belgium, I'm sure.
Absolutely. It was Nicole Vandenbroek in 1973, so 50 years since the last Belgian won the women's road race at the World Championships. But Glasgow, as I say, served up a very worthy World Championship winner for the second Sunday in a row, and we'll talk a bit more about it in a moment.
The Cycling Podcast is supported by Science in Sport. Science in Sport, fueled by science.
Leagues Cup returns to Columbus. Your reigning Leagues Cup champion Columbus Crew are hosting three matches at Lower.com Field. Come out and watch the crew take on teams from Liga MX, Toluca, Puebla, and León starting July 29th. Grab your tickets now at ColumbusCrew.com and watch the best in North America battle to keep the trophy at home in Columbus. No ties, only wins. Major League Soccer versus Liga MX. Leagues Cup returns to Columbus, Ohio. Be there.
When they finally caught Elise Chabbie, Denny, I did wonder whether she would just get dropped immediately, but she hung in there, didn't she, for an impressive seventh place finish. And it was notable that she was involved in that first move that went clear after around 20 kilometres, and then she was involved in the move that went clear as they were coming into Glasgow. And then, of course, you know, 60 kilometres off the front on her own. Really was ride of the day by Chabbie, wasn't it?
Yeah, it was a fantastic ride. She said in her post-race interview that, you know, coming into the circuit, having been on the attack with Lizzie Deignan, as you said earlier on in the day, she wasn't feeling completely fresh. And she had a chat with her teammate Marlon Reusser, who said she was feeling good. And I think that kind of basically led to her decision to kind of put in a dig, you know, to help Reusser behind. And it's the kind of move for a rider like that that can really pay off, can't it? We've seen it before. where it only takes kind of indecision and kind of a lack of coordination behind for a gap to open up very quickly. And as we said earlier, it looked like it might, to stay out alone for 60 kilometres, even on a circuit like that, even though that does kind of favour a break, I think it was a phenomenal performance given the strength behind her. Hats off to her, definitely one of, if not the ride of the day.
Well, it's a competitive old field, isn't it, for ride of the day. Shabby was also part of the Swiss mixed relay rainbow jersey winners earlier in the week. But what about the Dutch then? Because Demi Vollering and the defending champion Annemiek van Vleuten, I mean, it was pretty clear from relatively early in the race that Vollering was the number one protected rider and that van Vleuten was going to try and ride in service of Vollering. But there were moments, weren't there? I mean, van Vleuten found herself in this position where she was out the back of the main group of favourites, having had a front wheel puncture. As I said, the slow wheel change and then a bike change cost her a lot of time, but she fought her way back and then, in typical Annemiek van Vleuten style, was suddenly on the aggression, on the front foot again. Vollering was clearly trying to bide her time and was, I guess, worried about Lotte Kopecky. But the pair of them, they did try to whittle that group down earlier on, but it just didn't quite pan out for them. Every time there was an opportunity to get a little bit of a gap, there was that hesitation, or the chase came from behind, which I suppose is testimony to the sort of strength of the group rather than the weakness of the riders that were trying to get away. Because, as I say, it was just a slog, wasn't it? It was just one thing after another. Vollering almost pulled it off, really, but she perhaps paid for the big effort she made when it did look for a moment like she didn't have anything left in the tank. She was left on that little group with Ludwig on her wheel. No one was going to give her a turn, but she got herself back across. Probably paid a little bit for that effort when Kopecky, who, you know, hadn't had to do quite as much on the defensive, even though she was a lone rider for Belgium from, you know, quite a long way out. It was quite interesting how those tactics all played out, wasn't it?
It was really, really interesting, and it was always going to be a tricky one for the Dutch, because although they had the numbers, they didn't really have a finisher in the way that Belgium had Kopecky. Perhaps it's a bit unfair not to call van Vleuten and Vollering finishers, but they haven't got the kind of sprint that Kopecky and some of the others had. So they were always going to have to find a different way to win. And for a while, I thought they were playing kind of the SD Works card of not doing much work at all. Shabby was kind of busy kind of eking out her advantage and didn't feel like the Dutch were contributing a lot to a chase. Occasionally there would be an attack. I think Rianne Marcus went off the front, for example. But I think it was about 40k to go that they suddenly had some riders on the front. And then that's when the gap started coming down. And then shortly after that, there was the succession of attacks, which kind of led to this kind of group of six or seven at the front behind Shabby. And then, as you say, it was all about the kind of dynamic between van Vleuten and Vollering. I know there was some suggestion on the TV commentary that perhaps van Vleuten was kind of playing it kind of sneakily, trying to perhaps engineer a situation where she could get away and get a win. But I think that was a little bit unfair. I think she, as you say, Lionel, she put an enormous effort just to get back into the lead group at one stage after a mechanical. She was on the front trying to chase things down, and she was playing the card of kind of playing the counter-attack. She forced Kopecky to do a lot of work in chasing down her counter-attack. So, and I think towards the end, she just didn't have the legs to put in more effort than she did. I think on the climb, she seemed to be the one kind of clinging on at the back. So despite kind of all the kind of history between Vollering and van Vleuten and the confrontation, perhaps that's too strong a word, but the two had during stage seven on the Tour Fam, when neither would agree to work with each other when Nivea Dome was ahead, I think Annemiek van Vleuten put in a brilliant teammate's effort, and she should be applauded for her ride.
Yeah, and Vollering was left, you know, in that situation where no one was going to give her a turn, were they? I mean, I don't want to over-egg the kind of the SD Works factor here, but they do have a reputation for letting other teams do quite a bit of the work and then profiting at the end. There was certainly no one prepared to give Vollering a turn when it really mattered. And credit to her that, you know, she managed to, well, it looked like she was turning herself inside out to get back across. And she dragged Ludwig and others back up to the front. In itself, an impressive ride, but at that stage, one out slightly out of desperation, because it looked like Kopecky was riding away with it. But just before that, You know, I did wonder whether the Deignan-Schweinsteiger move was going to upset the apple cart a bit, because they did the classic thing, didn't they? They waited for it to all come back together and then just ghosted away. I mean, it was just sort of the classic diamond thief, as Daniel described Dylan Van Baarle once. You know, the move that nobody really realised was happening until it was too late. And that was what really forced first Reusser and then Capecchi to go across. And maybe that played into Capecchi's hands, because it finally gave her something to kind of ride against, you know, ride off, rather than having to make the racing all herself at the front. It was, you know, quite an important phase of the race on that last lap.
Yeah, it was, wasn't it? And as you say, kind of Vollering put in that massive effort to catch Deignan, Reusser, Capecchi, then had that the cramp. And, you know, and actually you kind of left to wonder what would have happened if she didn't have the cramp. I mean, it's part of sport and it's part of the effort she put in and part of the attritional nature of the race. But I felt that kind of probably hampered her in the last kind of 8K or so when she was then trying to chase Capecchi later. I think that just underlines how well Capecchi played it, because she was quite reactive, wasn't she? She, as you say, she... The move by Deignan and Schweinsteiger, when they ghosted away, then, as you say, prompted her to kind of chase after that, which then Vollering was forced to chase. And again, a bit later on, it was Ludwig's attack that Capecchi then countered, and which led to Capecchi then kind of riding away. So she used kind of the race, the way it was playing out, really well. She was able to kind of read what was happening, and she clearly had the legs as well. You know, I think she proved that she was the strongest rider on the race. And I think that course has shown time and time again that, you know, the cream does rise to the top on that course, which is what you want from world championships.
Absolutely. And well, Belgian cream is more of a sort of gravy, I think, actually. The gravy rose to the top, didn't it? No, it was very impressive. I mean, I did wonder when she was kind of, you know, gesturing and she did a dramatic pull off the front where no one else would roll through. I wonder whether that might play against her. But, I mean, it wasn't like she was, you know, giving away the fact she was frustrated or giving away the fact that she was strong. Everybody knew she was strong. Everybody knew she'd be the fastest at the finish. But she obviously didn't want to leave it to chance and go into the finish with even a couple of riders for company, just in case. Because at the end of such a... Well, an aggressive race, an unpredictable race. You know, anything could have happened on that that final sprint, couldn't it? As we saw with Ludwig getting pipped on the line by Vollering. Marlon Reusser rode, you know, a perfect kind of teammates race, and perhaps didn't have the legs to really capitalise, because, you know, conventionally speaking, she would have, you know, gone hard as soon as Shabby was caught, you would have thought. But given what she went through in the week, quite a turnaround for her.
Yeah, I was really, really impressed with her ride. She came in for lots of criticism on social media for kind of pulling out of the ITT midway through, which I felt was very unfair. I was kind of really, I really admired the fact that she was very open about her reasons for pulling out. Most riders may have just blamed it on tummy trouble or something similar, but she was open and honest about where she was at. And, you know, not being a professional athlete myself, unfortunately, I can't imagine the pressure someone like that has to deal with. And she was the favorite going into that ITT, and to come back despite kind of having that backlash today and put in a ride like that was, well, just to be on the start line was remarkable, and then to put in a performance like that is just only to be applauded. And I think I hope she now is able to get the kind of help and support she needs in kind of overcoming kind of the burnout and the mental health issues she's kind of admitted to facing.
Yeah, I'm with you on that, Denny. I think there's also a bit of a misunderstanding about the sort of the ebb and flow of, you know, when she was talking about mental burnout, you know, as if you can't experience, you know, sort of, I guess, highs and lows. I mean, as you say, it was brave of her to talk about the real reason for pulling out of the time trial. And, I mean, it's her prerogative as an athlete. You know, if she, for whatever reason, if she thinks, no, this is not going to do me any good in the medium term, maybe she was thinking, I've got the road race on Sunday and I don't want to, you know, ride myself into a cul-de-sac here. I'm going to just, you know, cut my losses and try and refocus and salvage something on Sunday. And she certainly did that. What about the British performance? Because, you know, it looked like they really had it nailed, didn't they? I mean, Anna Henderson did a lot of work early on. She was in a couple of those moves, the important moves before they reach the circuit and then once they were on the circuit. And then she had that crash on the left-hand turn with around 50 kilometres to go, which kind of ruled her out of the end game. Great Britain did also have Five for Georgie in there as well. And I suppose, you know, when you look at the profile of that course, you think, well, decent chance for sprinters. But we know that Five for Georgie is more than just a sprinter, but, you know, a very hard course unless you make those selections. And, well, it was Lizzie Deignan who made the selection. A really gutsy performance based, I would say, as much on her experience and know-how and knowledge of racing and herself. I mean, she must have felt like she was back at the Otley Crit at some points.
Yeah, I'm sure that kind of racing has served her in good stead. And yeah, it did feel like a ride based on her experience. But I think also, you know, she's over the years, she's shown herself as very good at kind of preparing herself for a one-day event and kind of excelling. You know, she's ridden her way back into kind of race sharpness this year. Kind of she rode the Giro d'Onna and then she rode the Tour Femme, and although she played mostly a team role there, she didn't really have any opportunities, or certainly she wasn't going for opportunities herself in those races. You know, I wonder how much she was trying to build herself towards these Worlds, knowing they were in Glasgow and knowing that it might be a course where she could pull something off. As you say, a very smart ride, smart the way she drifted off at the end. Showed a lot of experience. At one stage earlier on, when Anna Henderson was away, I could see her kind of interfering with the chase. She played it, and other times she seemed to be kind of shepherding Anna Shackley, who was obviously going for the under-23 title. So I felt all round it was just a brilliant performance, not just from her own perspective, kind of finishing sixth in the end, which is a fantastic result in itself, but also just in terms of being a great team player and a great kind of road captain.
Yeah, you mentioned the under-23 title. That actually went to Blanka Vass of Hungary, didn't it? And I think Shirin van Anrooy of the Netherlands was second and Anna Shackley was third. They were all in that kind of second big group, weren't they, behind the leaders. Well, one thing that's for certain is that there is a worthy winner of the race and someone who will show the rainbow jersey off just as prominently as Annemiek van Vleuten has done over the past 12 months. Lotte Kopecky will go into all of those classics in the rainbow jersey next season. And, I mean, it just continues her development into one of the best all-round riders in the world. As you say, you know, her Tour de France Femme performance was exceptional because, well, we expected something in the first half of the race, but it was the way that she clung on and scrapped and fought to get that second place on territory that we wouldn't really have thought was her kind of ideal ground. And of course, you know, medals on the track as well. She really is probably pound for pound the most complete all-round rider in the world at the moment.
Yeah, absolutely. I mean, I think she kind of deserves genuine superstar status in women's and just cycling generally, I think, at the moment. I hope she gets the attention she deserves in Belgium too. You know, I'm really looking forward to how she develops over the next few years, because she's one of those riders that, as you say, just can seem to win on all sorts of terrain. I think the challenge will be potentially what kind of rider she wants to be in the future. As you said, Lionel, she's clearly a consummate one-day rider, superb on the track as well. But of course, with her Tour Femme result where she was second, I guess she may have that niggling desire now to test herself out in the Grand Tours and see how she can do on GC2. And I think that's where it can get tricky for some riders. You know, you need to kind of commit to that. I think in women's cycling now, we're seeing more and more that you do need to be a specialist to some extent to really excel in certain types of races. So yeah, it'll be interesting to see where she takes it, but she's been a joy to watch all year. It'll be interesting to see how it now pans out also from a team perspective. SD Works have been the dominant team. They were the dominant team today, even though they weren't kind of riding as a team. They finished first, second, fourth, and they won the under-23 title. SD Works have a little bit of a challenge there as well, just to make sure that both Kopecky and Vollering can be happy.
Well, that's a very good point. I mean, it doesn't do an awful lot to kind of sort out the pecking order at SD Works, does it? I mean, they're know, very little to split them. Certainly in the classic races, we're going to see that same kind of soap opera again, aren't we? I would suspect maybe the rainbow bands will be the sort of clinching factor when it comes to some of the races where they are so evenly matched. We will have to wait and see. Anything else, Denny, before we wrap up? Any other talking points from the race today? Well, it was two races, really, wasn't it?
Well, yeah, I mean, that was, I think the frustrating thing from a point of view of a viewer, you know, there was an under 23 race going on. The UCI finally gave in and said there could be an under 23 title for women at last year's World Championships. And but of course, it's a race within a race, and it's not a satisfactory way to decide the winner of a race. Going into the race, I think people were wondering who was actually going for that title. You know, you knew riders like Blanka Vass. She was one of only two riders in for the Hungarian team. Some of the Kiwis, like Ella Wiley and Ali Wollaston, might be going for the under 23 title. But then you also had a rider like Shirin Van Anroy, who, a brilliant rider in herself, finished 13th in the end. But she said before the race that she wasn't allowed to think about it. You know, it was all in for Damie Vollering. And it kind of, it makes a bit of a mockery, I think, of having an under 23 title when riders are kind of have these kind of split loyalties. You know, they may be wanting to win something for themselves, but clearly also they've got their team duties and they need to kind of play to team orders. You know, even Blanka Vass, who was obviously very pleased to win the under 23 title in the end, said it didn't feel like winning. You know, she couldn't put her hands up in the air and cross the line first. You know, I know the UCI have said that they will move to having a separate race by 2025. It's a shame it can't be sooner, really, because it just, for me anyway, Lionel, it just kind of undermines the point of having an under 23 title if riders can't race to win it.
Yeah, I guess the issue is that there isn't an under 23 women's category at elite level, is there? So unlike with the men, so I suppose there is a kind of a journey that the UCI is on here, getting to a point where there are enough under 23 riders who would want to do an under 23 race, because obviously most of the best under 23 riders are eligible for and able to race in the elite road race. So I suppose it's moving towards a position where maybe there will be an under 23 category and events, you know, spread across the season. But at the moment, there probably isn't another solution, but it is an unsatisfactory one at the moment, because as you say, you know, it was sort of in the back of our minds, wasn't it? But even, you know, Anna Shackley, if there's work to be done for Lizzie Deignan or Anna Henderson or Pfeiffer Georgie, well, that would take priority over her own ambitions. So yeah, a tricky one, but Blanka Vass will be the under 23 world champion and will have an under 23 rainbow jersey in her collection. Denny, we should wrap it up there. Thank you very much for joining me this afternoon. I think, did the B team do okay? C team, maybe? I don't know. Let the listeners decide on that one, maybe. Of course, the Cycling Podcast Feminin will be back in due course. And Denny, hopefully you will be back on the Cycling Podcast. Well, I know you'll be back on the Cycling Podcast at some point in the not too distant future. But thank you very much for joining me this afternoon.
No, thanks for having me, Lionel. Absolute pleasure.
The Cycling Podcast was created in 2013 by Richard Moore, Daniel Freeb, and Lionel Burney.
Leagues Cup returns to Columbus. Your reigning Leagues Cup champion Columbus Crew are hosting three matches at Lower.com Field. Come out and watch the crew take on teams from Liga MX, Toluca, Puebla, and León starting July 29th. Grab your tickets now at ColumbusCrew.com and watch the best in North America battle to keep the trophy at home in Columbus. No ties, only wins. Major League Soccer versus Liga MX. Leagues Cup returns to Columbus, Ohio. Be there.